You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
That's right. It's time for With First Pick Podcast, our NFL Draft Podcast. I'm CBS Sports Draft Analyst Ryan Wilson. This is our general manager, Rick Spielman, more than 30 years NFL experience, 10 years as the Vikings general manager. This is episode 9. This may look a little different, Rick, because we're in the same room because we're in Mobile, Alabama. The Senior Bowl practices have concluded. So this is the conference room that Debo set us up with to do this episode. Coming to you from Alabama. Next week, we'll actually be at the Super Bowl, which is worth keeping in mind. So this episode is going to be obviously about recapping what we saw for 3 days in Mobile at the Senior Bowl with all the players here. We'll do a little news about things that have happened around the league. And then we'll look forward to the Super Bowl next week where the Chiefs are playing the old Eagles there. So first things first here, what do we need to talk about? Next week, Tuesday, we'll be recording Onset Live, I believe, is what Debo said, from the Super Bowl, which will be in Phoenix, Arizona at Hans Park. And Debo, I'm going to read this little thing that you sent around earlier. If you're in Phoenix the week of the Super Bowl 57, stop by the Super Bowl experience at Hans Park to play CBS Sports and Paramount Plus's Fan Face-Off. So there'll be all sorts of podcast goobers there like me and Brinson and Breach. There'll be more reputable folks there like you, Chris Hassel, Amanda Guerra. Prisco will be there by force of will.
Is that reputable or not?
That's just the guy that we work with that we had to mention, contractually obligated to talk about. So that'll be next week, the Senior Bowl. Super Bowl. If you're in town, stop by Hans Park. We'll be there every single day from morning until late afternoon. And I think bands come on at 7 p.m. local time. So those are things to look forward to next week. But this week, Senior Bowl, as we record this, it's Thursday afternoon. All three practices are over. And let's start at the top here. So let's start with some news first, and then we'll circle back around to the Senior Bowl situation and what we saw a year ago while we were here is when the Brian Flores news broke, which was obviously very serious, and he was able to be gainfully employed and had a good season in Pittsburgh. This is sort of less impactful off the field, but certainly perhaps impactful on the field. Tom Brady retired.
Yeah.
And when he retired a year ago, I thought he was serious. And then he decided that he wasn't serious and came back. It does sound like he's serious now. I saw where Robert Kraft is going to sign Tom Brady to a one-day contract. So I guess after you do that, the retirement papers aren't officially in, but it certainly feels like you're done.
Yeah, and did you know, just a little tidbit on that,
yeah,
when you sign a player, why they do it now instead of at the 53-man cut or during a season? Because they actually have to count against your active roster.
Oh.
So if you have a 90-man roster, okay, you have to cut someone in order to sign Tom Brady for a year, then you can put him in retirement and bring that player back. Just a little tidbit for the fans out there.
So another little loophole for guys who are obviously retiring on the one-day deal. So let's talk quickly. I'll ask you this. I don't know if you've been asked this before, but do you remember scouting Tom Brady back in 2000?
Yeah, no, apparently not, because we missed on him too.
but again, 199th overall, all 32 teams missed on him, or having 30 teams, I mean, there were at the time. Do you remember him?
No, we've talked about him just like we've talked about all those guys. It was a late round guy, to be honest with you. I don't think anyone ever anticipated the type of career and that he may be the greatest quarterback to ever play the game in the NFL. And you know, we were talking about earlier that if you look at a lot of these, the Joe Burrows of the world and the Patrick Mahomes, all these superstar quarterbacks that are coming up now, they may be the GOAT, but will they ever be able to replicate the career that Tom Brady has had, to play to 45 years old, to do what he's done? I don't think we'll ever see that again in our lifetimes.
So it was Tom Brady and Drew Stanton, I believe. Were they sharing reps at the time at Michigan? Is that who it was?
Yeah, I believe it was.
And you talk about this a lot on the podcast and even when we're just chit-chatting at the Senior Bowl, how important the interviews are. Did you interview Tom Brady? Do you remember that, like the combine? Or
No. I know we had some scouts interview him, okay, because he didn't make, you know, at the combine, you can only request so many formal interviews.
Right.
And most of those interviews that you're going to use at the combine are guys that maybe you didn't catch here at the East West or the Senior Bowl, but a lot of those will go towards the juniors that are going to come out, because that's the first time you'll get an opportunity to interview those when you're at the combine.
So the Bucs have a late round. They had to pick after the midway through the first round in the 20s. Now they have a quarterback issue. Maybe they would have had a quarterback issue either way if Tom Brady, because he was going to be out of contract. Blaine Gabbert is no longer under contract. They have Kyle Trask.
I think he's the only one left under contract for that roster right now.
That's right. So, and we've talked about this at length. The four quarterbacks, Bryce Young, you and I both like, C.J. Stroud, you and I both like, Will Levis and Anthony Richardson are going to be divisive for different reasons, but all those guys could be long gone by 15, never mind in the mid-20s. If you're the Buccaneers, is Derek Carr a solution? Are you looking free agency? What's your plan?
Yeah, well, you're not going to be able to draft one of these top four quarterbacks. Now, if someone actually slides and you get lucky, but I don't know if you can risk doing that, especially with only one quarterback and a Kyle Trask on your roster. So they're going to have to get very aggressive, I believe, in free agency to go out and get one of these vet quarterbacks to come in. And they should, because even if they did draft a rookie quarterback, it's going to take time to develop that player, especially one of those guys that fall down that far. And they have a veteran roster that has a lot of very good players on it. They're still a roster that can go out and compete for an NFC South title, get in the playoffs and see what happens. But they need a trigger man or a quarterback in order for them to be competitive next year, especially if they want to get back into the playoffs.
The Bucs pick 19th, actually. So Debo has it on if you're watching on YouTube. They're 19th right now. So, I don't know, maybe Anthony Richardson falls that far, but something would happen.
Well, let me ask you this. You've scouted Anthony Richardson. If you're Tampa Bay, would you go after a vet? Or do you think that you would give the keys to the car to Anthony Richardson with that roster right now and expect to go out and win?
Here's what I do. I would take Anthony Richardson if he were there at 19. And then you talk about rookie quarterbacks and the concerns with that. Well, you have Kyle Trask. He hasn't played a lot. He came out in the same class.
Have you seen Kyle Trask play in the preseason?
Well, here's the thing, right? So Kyle Trask, Davis Mills, Kellerman all went basically one after the next, bottom of the second, early the third, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where did you have those? You obviously drafted Kellerman, and I liked him a lot at the time. Where did you have those guys ranked?
Well, Kyle Trask, the biggest issue with him was he was more of those old school, maybe a Bruce Arians type quarterback that wasn't as athletic, a pure pocket passer.
Right.
They can stand in there, and he flung the ball around the yard pretty good when he was at Florida. But I don't know if it's going to fit with whoever their new offensive coordinator is, which would be a big part of this,
right,
on what direction they go at that position.
Okay. Let me add, that leads me to another question. So, as a general manager, you're hiring everybody that's underneath you on the org charts. And so when it comes to an offensive coordinator, you're obviously talking to the coach about what he wants, and then that's going to fit what happens with the quarterback you draft or sign.
Right. Well, the head coach has to make the determination on who the offensive coordinator is going to be. And we have to all be aligned with the same philosophy going forward.
Right.
So you have to look at the personnel you have. You have to look at the scheme that can potentially fit whoever your quarterback is that new offensive coordinator willing to make adjustments to his scheme to fit the skill set of the quarterback, a la, you know, when Greg Roman was at Baltimore before he let go, they revamped their whole offense to fit what Lamar Jackson does. And it seems the teams that are having the best chance to have success are those offensive coordinators that understand what the strengths and weaknesses are of the quarterback, and then adjusting their scheme accordingly.
So to answer your question, I'm drafting Anthony Richardson if he's there at 19. I'm starting Kyle Trask, and if Kyle Trask sucks 4 weeks in, going to get thrown into the deep end. And I'm of the opinion that I'm okay letting these guys sit. I know we don't live in an age where quarterbacks, especially first round guys, can sit, but Prisco and Brady Quinn are always like, throw them out there. And Brady said previously this fall that he would just put Anthony Richardson out there and see what happens. How do you feel about that?
Well, it depends where your team is. If you have a veteran team,
let's say
which I think it's a veteran team, then you're going to have to find different ways to win a game than relying on a quarterback. He can't come in and put that team on his back. They're going to have to do something similar to what, and I don't think they have as talented of a roster as the San Francisco 49ers did this year when Brock Purdy came in. I mean, he got the ball out of his hands quick, got it to his playmakers, made enough plays, and that's why San Francisco had so much success with Brock Purdy. They would have to make sure that they have enough playmakers, and I don't know if their playmakers right now on offense match what the San Francisco 49ers have.
No, it's close. I mean, it's hard to match that even with Mike Evans and Rashad White's not going to be the running back, and, of course, the slot guy from Penn State, whose name escapes me, who's that?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Huh? He was coming off Godwin.
Godwin. Thank you, Chris Godwin. I saw the hamster running around up there. I couldn't think of his name. Okay, so let me turn the tables on you, and then before we move on, as the general manager of the Buccaneers, are you going out for Derek Carr or Jacoby Brissett or whoever you're, Jimmy Garoppolo, or are you going to draft?
No, you're going to look at all your options because you're in these meetings right now. You're identifying your needs, and then you're going to put together a game plan. Do we want to go the veteran route because of where our roster is and who's going to actually be available? And is it going to be reasonable to go out and get these guys? But you also got to tie in what it's like with your cap, where your cap situation is right now. I know the cap's jumping up. I think the $225 million or somewhere this year, but you still be able to have to fit that quarterback's salary into the cap as well.
Yeah.
Because if you bring in someone and you have to sacrifice a good football player because they can't fit them both in the cap, you better make sure that quarterback is the right quarterback. But I see them going, leaning more towards a veteran quarterback, whether that's Garoppolo, whether that's, you know, Derek Carr, and if they trade for him, what's that compensation going to be? Mm-hmm. But look at the number that Derek Carr has. If you do trade for him, you would have to also rework the contract in order to fit everything into your cap. I don't see Rodgers going down there, to be honest with you. But they'll look at the veteran market, and they're going to have to figure out which one that they have a legitimate chance to go out and get.
Yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, Debo has the list of free agents: Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Jimmy G. We talk about Teddy Bridgewater, Daniel Jones, who'll probably end up staying, put Case Keenum. A lot of former Spielman guys on this list here. Mason Rudolph, who really hasn't had a chance to play, Geno Smith will probably stay put as well. So, right, it's not slim pickings, but you got to get in early or you're going to be left without a chair.
General manager at Tampa Bay, I'd be very busy at the combine.
Okay, one last question, because you talked about the contract situation with these veteran quarterbacks. That's the beauty of having a quarterback on a rookie deal. Would that play at all in your thought process, or are you more concerned about winning in September?
Well, you just got to decide, and that's usually with your ownership involved, is are we going to go total rebuild? Are we going to tear this roster down, or are we going to kind of retool and try to get a guy to come in? And maybe you do get an Anthony Richardson, but you also bring in a veteran and let him sit for a little bit, like you mentioned a little earlier, and maybe you go a cheaper route on a quarterback like an Andy Dalton or like a Teddy Bridgewater or Case Keenum. But you know, if you did draft Anthony Richardson, that eventually he's going to take over. It's just a matter of when does he take over.
Okay, let's talk about the Texans and the D'Amico Ryans hire. They have two first-round picks. They have the second pick and the 12th pick, I believe. And I love this hire for one reason. And you and I talked about this a little bit, but a lot of times offensive or defense coordinators are the hot name because of how they've done in their job. But it feels like sometimes they're going from a coordinator to a head coaching job, it's like going from a lawyer to an accountant. Like you're asked to do something completely different that you may not be equipped to do.
Like me going from a general manager to a podcaster now.
That's as you all, he's joked the entire week, Debo, that he's broke, he's homeless, and this is his lot in life being stuck with me. And it's a fair point. But it does feel like maybe you've had this experience where you've fallen in love with a candidate based on what they accomplished on one job, but you're now asking them to be a manager over offense, defense, special teams, a whole group of players, not just one room of players. And it feels like D'Amico Ryans can bring some structure perhaps to a Texans team that has been disorganized the last few years, in part because they keep firing the coaches. Do you like this hire? And do you sort of buy my theory that it's important to have a guy who can manage people, maybe more so than do X's and O's?
Yeah, I think it was a great hire for Houston. One, because that's a former player who had a very productive career. Yeah. We've been to some Pro Bowls. Not only was he a very good football player off the field, but as a player, he was a great leader in the community. You hear players that played with him talk about him and how he took command, even as a player, as a team leader. So a lot of times when you're trying to hire a head coach, you want to make sure that they have at least one skill set on the offense or defensive side. In his situation, he's done a great job as a defensive coordinator to make sure he brings someone with a very detailed and successful background on the offensive side.
Right.
But the most important thing that I think he brings to that organization is structure and leadership. And it sounds like everybody you talk to, that he's one of those guys that when he gets in front of the room, he has a presence about him. When he gets in front of the room, those guys want to play for that guy. Just like your quarterback, they have to want to play for your head coach, and he has to have command and control. And I think he has all of those characteristics and traits that they were looking for.
Let me ask you this. What would you rather have? Would you rather have someone who was a great motivator, maybe didn't know, you know, X's and O's so much? And I'm not saying about D'Amico Ryans. I think obviously, as you said, he's a former player. Defensive coordinator with Shanahan is doing a fantastic job there. But just for this hypothetical, because I know you love hypotheticals.
Oh, yeah. This is what we're in, a hypothetical business.
So great motivator, but maybe, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about when you talk to him privately. Or do you want a guy who mumbles but is an absolute genius?
No, you have to have a guy that's the leader.
Okay.
Because if he can't get up there and command – and doesn't have presence in front of that room, yeah, how do you expect those guys to follow him? Now, he's coming in with instant credibility, not only what he did as a player, but what he did as a defensive coordinator in San Francisco. And when you're looking from the front office and you're working with the ownership group, you're trying to find guys that have had success. Well, look at what came out of Kyle Shanahan's coaching tree. I mean, he's got Robert Saleh at the Jets, and he's got them starting to turn around if they get their quarterback resolved.
Right.
LaFleur in Green Bay. So he's had a lot of successful McDaniel that's down in Miami.
Yeah, that's right.
Mike McDaniel was another one out of the Shanahan tree. So you know that Mike Shanahan has done a great job, or Kyle, I'm sorry, has done a great job not only finding coaches that are future head coaches, but developing these coaches. And everyone so far that's came out of his tree has had a lot of success. And that goes when you're doing the background and you're putting all the pieces together, that's something that you have to look at as well.
And I would imagine, in much the same way that when we talk about we're scouting these players at the Senior Bowl, for example, when you talk to the coaches from their college coaching staffs, if they're like, he's a great practice player, for example. When you talk to Kyle Shanahan about Mike McDaniel, if you're the Dolphins, he says, yeah, he's a great practice coach. That, to me, that might be a red flag to you that maybe this guy isn't cut out to be head coach.
Or Kyle Shanahan's trying to keep him so he doesn't get a job.
That's true. That's different. That's right. He's not.
So you got to look at both, because sometimes the red flag goes up if a head coach is trying to really push a candidate on you. Oh, why do you want to get rid of him so bad?
Oh, so it's the reverse. That's why you're the general manager on the podcast. You actually think these things through. All right, let's talk about the other sort of big news that came down this week. Sean Payton is now the head coach of the Denver Broncos. The elephant in the room, of course, is Russell Wilson and what happened to him. As a general manager, I don't know if this ever came across your desk because there haven't been a lot of instances of it. I think maybe Jimmy Johnson, I'd have to go back and look, but trading picks for a coach. And they gave him a first-round pick, this year's first-round pick, which is at the bottom of the first round, the former 49ers pick for Bradley Chubb. I'm not sure what the pick was. It was originally the 49ers pick. Bradley Chubb, that's what it was. Sorry. And then a second round pick as well. So that feels rich because you already get the first rounders for Russ Wilson to acquire him last offseason. Your team struggled beyond anyone's comprehension this year, and now you don't have to draft ammunition to help rebuild that roster. But you have a coach who has been a proven winner, especially when it comes to offensive philosophy.
Yeah, I don't know if they had a choice. They had to hit a home run in their head coaching. And you have Russell Wilson, who you gave a lot of draft capital up for, that you are married to with the new contract over the next four, at least 4 years. So you better have someone, and it didn't work with it because he was a rookie coach, and that mixture, whatever reason, didn't work. So if you got a guy like a Peyton coming in that has had success with the Drew Brees, has taken New Orleans Saints to a Super Bowl, has been pretty much the dominant team in the NFC South until Tampa Bay got Brady.
Yeah.
He knows how to win, and he knows how to put a very good coaching staff together. So I don't think Denver had much of a choice. They had to knock it out of the park, especially when you have a new ownership group coming in.
Right.
And that makes a difference too. So when you have a veteran quarterback that had a down year that you just gave all this money and draft capital to, you better go out and get a coach that has experience, and hopefully he has the same success that he had with Drew Brees when Drew Brees came, when he left the Chargers,
right,
and came in to New Orleans. And since he has a track record of that, I can see why they did that. But they had no other option, in my opinion.
Right. And if you're watching on YouTube, Debo had the graphic of just how successful Sean Payton was during his time in New Orleans. All right, I'll ask you this quickly before we take a break and circle back to the Senior Bowl, guys. Drew Brees coming out, Russ Wilson coming out. Russ was obviously a third-round pick. Drew was an early second-round pick. Did you have them graded similarly, differently?
Oh, boy. Well, both of them were short.
Both
so
short.
Back when those guys came out, that was an issue.
Right.
There's no way they're going to be successful in the NFL because they can't see over the offensive linemen.
Right.
And they were very good college quarterbacks. And, you know, I remember scouting Russell Wilson both at North Carolina State. And then he transferred to Wisconsin because Mike Glennon was going to be the quarterback. And so I think that's why he ended up leaving North Carolina State to go to Wisconsin. But the minute he stepped on campus at Wisconsin, they named him team captain that summer. He had a great one-year career at Wisconsin. And so that was the year we actually coached him down at the Senior Bowl.
Oh, okay.
Leslie Frazier and the staff we had then, actually Kevin Stefanski. All those guys were around Russell Wilson, and we knew what kind of character he was. He was smart, brilliant in the classroom and everything. Just didn't know, because he was short, if he was going to have the success that he's had. But that was the same knock on Drew Brees. Both of those, you know, shot that theory or that myth out of the water.
And now, to circle back to D'Amico Ryans before we take this break, second overall pick, Bryce Young could be that guy, and he's the smallest of any of them. And that'll be, you know, something to watch unfold and see how it plays out. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and then we'll actually talk about some Senior Bowl stuff since we're here at the Senior Bowl.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. If you haven't noticed already, me and Rick are sporting our With the First Pick podcast.
And our producer, Debo, will make sure everybody gets a free With the First Pick t-shirt down if you come see us at the Senior Bowl or at the Super Bowl.
All right, Debo, get your marching orders. All right, so let's talk about the old Senior Bowl. So you and I watched all three practices, American and National, and – let's see. Let's start with the quarterbacks, because that's where we should always start when we have these conversations.
Well, why don't we just end it right here? Because it was a rough go for quarterbacks on both sides. And, you know, if you've seen Ritter here, you've seen Herbert here. I remember, you know, seeing Phillip Rivers here. I mean, there's always been some good quarterbacks,
right,
at least one good quarterback. But I don't know if any of these guys really stood out to even consider on a Friday. I think all the guys that we've seen here this week were going to be either late round or college free agents.
Yeah, like it came in and you.
I felt bad for the receivers because from my favorite line in the movies from Major League, just a bit outside was the theme when you watch these quarterbacks throw this week.
There were a lot of misses for sure. And I came in, I thought Jaren Hall had put out some good tape in the fall. He struggled. He may have struggled more than anyone in this Senior Bowl. That doesn't mean his career is over. It just means that he struggled for these 3 days. If you're going to press me, maybe Max Duggan was the
best, I would say.
The bunch.
Yeah.
Toon struggled at times. Hainer is only six. He only measures 6 feet tall. And
I really had an issue with his deep ball accuracy this week.
He missed a lot of guys deep, even on the one-on-ones. That was a concern. And then
Cunningham came in late.
Malik Cunningham came in late, and he did some things well, but he, 5'11", 187. He can obviously win with his legs, but he probably had the best touch on the deep balls of the ones that we saw. And again, we haven't gone back and watched the practice tape, just watching it live. And then Tyson Bajan, from Shepherd, Division II in West Virginia, he struggled.
I would say this. He is big. He looked athletic for a big quarterback moving around. He does have a strong arm, yep. A very smooth release. I think you're going from Shepherd to all of a sudden down to Senior Bowl, it's a little bit of a shock to your system. Sure. He settled down a little bit, but he also missed some throws. And the one thing I really question, when you're playing at Shepherd and nothing against Shepherd, it's not playing against the same caliber of talent that he saw here down at the Senior Bowl. So the throwing windows are going to be a lot closer when a DB is on. Sometimes he held the ball. I don't know how quickly he got through his progressions, but they all seem to struggle with that this week.
Yeah, and we saw our guy, Lijay Aduzibal, down here as well, and he said to me, we saw him on Wednesday afternoon before the practice started, and he said to me, and you said this as well, Tuesday are nerves. So you drop a ball, you fumble a ball, you miss some throws. Maybe it's just nerves because it's a new environment and a little pressure.
And the other thing about it is you got to remember some of these guys haven't had pads on or football practice since December.
And that's the other thing.
Yeah. So that's over a month. Some of these guys that came from the small schools that weren't in the playoffs, they ended in November.
So if you're making these same mistakes on Wednesday, Thursday, then you start to have questions.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about some guys that were smaller school prospects that came in and maybe try to get their feet wet or feet under them on Tuesday, but you've seen them continue to climb and get better each day out of practice. And it was disappointing, though, that we didn't see that out of this quarterback class that is down here.
Right. All right, let's start with the small school guys that you want to focus on. We'll talk about the guys who had good weeks. Do you have anyone in mind, or do you want me to start?
Go ahead and start, and I'll go ahead and tell you if you're right or wrong, as I always do on this podcast. Apparently, it makes people mad, but that's fine.
You're going to like this one because I think we can both agree, and I'm thinking this is the small school guy you were talking about, Cody Mauch,
yeah.
North Dakota State. Measured just under 6'5". I think he was just a little bit over 300. Short arms, 32 and change, which is short if you're playing tackle, which is what he played in North Dakota State. So he worked all week inside at guard and at center. And the first few reps on Tuesday, he looked a little, not overwhelmed, but surprised by the speed and the power that he was going up against. And then after that, he looked like he fit right in. And at points on Thursday, I thought he was actually dominating the one-on-ones in particular.
Yeah, he was one of the small school kids that the stage wasn't too big for.
That's our guy.
And when he's done his NFL career, he'll be on this podcast. All three of us will be squeezed in here to a small hotel room in Mobile, Alabama. And probably me and Ryan will both have our T Smithing by then, too. but he did a great job adjusting to the speed of the game. And it's not only the speed of the players and the power of the players that he's going against. The one thing is that when you move from tackle, you're kind of out on an island, and he played left tackle his whole career there. Then all of a sudden you slide inside the guard. Well, those defensive linemen are on you a lot quicker because you're in a smaller area. And so you have to get adjusted to how quickly things are going to happen inside. And I think as he got comfortable on Wednesday and even today, he really took a step forward, and very excited to see him even in pass protection in the one-on-one drills, how he was able to move his feet. He's more than athletic enough to play guard. I'm not so sure, though, and I may be wrong. I understand he has short arms, but some teams may draft him to see if he fails at left tackle. The thing that I was a little surprised at, unless I missed it, I didn't see him take any left tackle reps while he was down here. So usually when teams are talking about players with Jim Nagy, who does a phenomenal job running the Senior Bowl, they want to see him. And we saw a lot of guys at multiple positions, especially on the offensive line. But he wasn't. He stayed at guard. He had a couple of snaps at center and the one on those, but most time he was just guard. And so I think teams just wanted to see, did he improve as he moved inside? And I think he solidified himself as for sure a day two potential offensive guard in this draft.
Right. And I talked about this on Thursday morning. We were on HQ, and I mentioned Quinn Meinerz from Wisconsin Whitewater a few years ago during the COVID year, came here. His season had been canceled because of COVID, and he had a really good week and ended up going third round, 90th overall to the Broncos, where he now starts on the offensive line. I think he's better than Quinn Meinerz, who I thought was a good football player.
A good football player. I think this kid is longer.
Yep.
I think this kid is just as or probably more athletic. And I think this kid has more position flexibility.
Right. So you want to give us a name? One of your favorites?
We're staying on small school, or are we going big school? We just open it all up.
Let me, Debo, just note, reminder, one of our $1 bets.
Yep.
Mouth versus Freeland. Who goes first?
Oh, I already won that one.
I think Debo has already won. Freeland, he had an average week. I think I would like to have seen more. We can talk about that later, Dave. He's not on our list of guys to talk about. I'm sort of still licking my wounds from that one. So I'm down a dollar, it looks like. But I'm going to get you on the other $1 bet if I remember what that one is, too. We'll talk about that later. So you can talk small school, any guy that you have as a riser that wants to get you going.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about this was some of these corners that we didn't know a lot about really stepped up. And I was really impressed with watching them in one-on-one drills, watching them. A couple guys was Rush from South Carolina.
There's
who Rush. I didn't know much about. Everybody here is about Cam Smith, the other corner,
who's going to be
a first round pick. But this kid didn't blink an eye in one-on-one drill. He's got receiver background. He's a former receiver. So when you saw him mirroring the receivers running routes, he was actually breaking a lot of times before the receivers got out of break. So he made a lot of plays this week that I think that really stood out. And Caillou Blue Kelly.
Got it. Look at
you. Yeah, I've been practicing. A Stanford man. Actually, I was surprised how athletic and smooth he was and how instinctive he was during this whole week. And then the other safety that probably made a big jump today, and we talked about him, was your sawed-off safety from Illinois, Sidney Brown. And I was surprised because he's a shorter safety, really rocked up and yoked up. But he made plays in space this week. So when they had him back, you seen his transition, you seen him close and recognize routes where when you watch the Illinois tape, he was mostly in man coverage and beating up tight ends, but you rarely seen him on the back end of a defense. And this week, I think he answered some of those questions that he can play in the deep half of the field as well.
And it's funny you say that because I was talking to a scout before the Senior Bowl about Sidney Brown. What?
It's not that funny, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Rick Comedy Standards, it's hilarious. But he said basically what you said. He said it's not so much how short Sidney is how the length. Like, how his arms, can he play in space? And he did show those things, and he got better as the week went on. So Sidney Brown, for me, is a day three guy, a special teamer, and that's just reality, probably given his size. If he's 6'2", 225, then that's a different conversation. I would imagine you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. He can probably help you out as a backup.
Let me ask you, I'm trying to start my Rolodex is going on comparisons. Let me throw this one out.
You're not going to say what are you going
to
say?
Are you anticipating what I'm going to say? Let me see if you're right.
Bob Sanders.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I was just joking in the stands. There is a safety from the University of Florida that was with the New Orleans Saints that ended up getting traded to the Philly.
Chauncey Gardner Johnson.
Yeah.
He wasn't this small, though, was he?
Yeah.
He was?
Yeah.
Well, he's a Bulldog.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing that just popped into my head when I'm sitting here kind of going through the Rolodex.
And
so it'll be interesting to see what he runs and all that stuff. But
he's a fourth-round pick, I believe.
Yeah. But I was surprised that Sidney Brown ran, and I think he's going to run a really good 40 at the combine.
So make a note, Debo. Debo's an Eagles fan, so you might get your Sidney Johnson, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson 2.0 and Sidney Brown, whose twin brother, by the way, is Chase Brown, the running back who was also here this week from Illinois. You mentioned Darius Rush, so we talked about Cam Smith throughout the fall because he was the guy that was on everyone's radar as a first-round pick. And Darius Rush just flew under the radar until this week. And it felt like even though he was really good Wednesday, he somehow got better on Thursday. I'm going to ask you again. If he came in as a, you know, he's a middle day three guy for you, it certainly feels like he could crack a top 100 type conversation.
Yeah, I think after this week, and now let's see how he does through the rest of the pre-draft process. Because I know, you know, when you're sitting there breaking all these guys down and you're going through 100 corners and you want to make sure, okay, I got to really hone in on Cam Smith because I know he's going to be a first round talent. We'll make sure. And I don't want to say that Rush is an afterthought, but maybe was a little bit during the season. And then all of a sudden he comes down, does what he does at the Senior Bowl. I don't think he's an afterthought anymore.
And Kelly, you mentioned from Stanford, the cornerback.
Caillou Blue Kelly.
I'm sure I got that right. So Debo, if you're watching on YouTube, this is the scoreboard that Rick and I would look at every few minutes and see Darius Rush's name at the top. I think he was a 4.55 guy before the season is how he was measured. He looked a lot faster out there. Certainly Trey Palmer, the wide receiver from Nebraska, you mentioned that he looked fast on tape. Ja'Corian Bennett, the cornerback that I like out of Maryland, who plays opposite Deontay Banks, who's going to be in the first round conversation. And let's go to the last two guys because we like both these players. And, you know, you make fun of me for liking the smaller guys. Trey Tucker's tiny. Tyjae Spears is a little bigger, perhaps. Tyjae Spears had a great first day, and he parlayed that into two more really strong days at the running back position, the running back out of Tulane. And then Trey Tucker, who's probably, well, let me ask you, is he more in the eyes of NFL teams that are evaluating him? You look at him as returner first and then wide receiver.
I think he's good enough to be a slot. Because he was a mismatch, you know, all these small guys, but the burst and speed he has getting into out of his cuts. But the guy that I'm surprised was not up there was a guy that I really like, Tank Dell, that came out this week from Houston. And I think when you look at all these guys and we talked about it, okay, you start clustering guys together where they're going to go in the draft. And so my cluster of these small slot receivers that are going to be, all three of them are going to have very good punt return skills and probably legit punt returners in the NFL was Tucker from Cincinnati, was Dell from Houston, and then Darius Davis, who you kind of liked because of the speed, from TCU. But after this week and after we got an opportunity, and this is what's so great about the Senior Bowl, you got to see him back to back to back and who's doing what in practice. To me, I thought Tank Dell really stood out of those three and separated himself a little bit in that cluster.
Yeah, I like Trey a little better. Darius didn't practice on Thursday. At least we didn't see him out there unless we missed him. So we'll find out what happened with that. But that's right. You talk about these clusters, guys in similar size, weight, speed.
Ability.
Job responsibility categories. So like fourth round feels maybe a little too rich because they're – limited what they can do on the field against bigger cornerbacks. So maybe I'm wrong because they add something in the special teams.
Yeah, but if you know that you're going to get a legitimate punt returner, if one of these guys go to the combine and all of a sudden bust out a 4.3 or a 4.2, that's going to bump them up a little bit. I think they're Saturday guys. But one of those guys, if they continue to do what they've been doing through this pre-draft process, maybe get to the end of the third. I think who New England take last year in the third round. Is that right?
He's small,
can run, but he won a couple games for him as a returner. And then they put him over. He's a corner, but then they put him over on the offensive side of the ball. And he made some plays as an offense.
He had some receptions at Houston as well, playing receiver. Yeah. They took advantage of that athleticism. As you like to say, a little more rocked up than perhaps the cluster of guys we saw this week, but still, those guys are incredibly athletic and they're not rail thin. And let's see, any other guys you want to highlight that you loved?
Oh, yeah. Who's my center that I love the most? I've been talking about him, Debo, since September.
So Debo Prisco makes fun of me for falling in love with the players when I come here, and there's a long list of guys. I have been outshone by Rick's love for John Michael Schmitz, the center out of Minnesota, who had a great week, had a great season. What stood out to you about his game?
Because he's not a small center. A lot of these guys that we've seen are usually smaller, more athletic guys. But he's a big center. I've said this, and my comparison was Fredrickson, who Dallas took from Wisconsin late in the first round. It might have been a second or last pick in the first round when they drafted him, Travis Fredrickson. But I thought he had similar traits to athletic enough to either fit the zone or gap. He was stout in pass protection. He moves his feet and adjusts to any type of pass rush move that he faced this week. But the other thing that he doesn't get enough credit for, because he's a bigger body, when they work these combination blocks with the guard, so the guard in the center will jump on top or start blocking the defensive tackle, and then he would release up to the linebacker, and it was kind of combination block. And this guy played on his feet. I was extremely impressed with how he moved in space.
If you are a team lucky enough to get John Michael Schmitz in the second round and get Osiris Torrance in the first round, I think you're set.
You're set with your offensive line, because both of those guys had great weeks, and both of those guys are going to be day one starters as rookies.
And what if you trade back up into the second round and get another guy who flashed on day one, and then he had concussion-like symptoms, but if he had just decided to go home, I would understand. DeJuan Jones.
6'8". Go ahead.
6'8", 375, 36-plus inch arms.
It was like his wingspan made him 7'5".
He blocked out the sun.
Yeah.
89.5 inch wingspan, longest ever at the Senior Bowl. If you're watching on YouTube, Debo had to graphic up. His nickname is Big Thanos. So he's not just regular size Thanos. He's Big Thanos.
Who's Thanos?
Again, Debo, this is what I'm up against. But I was talking to someone on the staff of one of the Big Ten teams, defensive staff that faced Oklahoma State. And I said, who was a
bigger issue? Ohio State.
Thank you. I said, who was a bigger issue for you to prepare for? DeJuan Jones or Paris Johnson Jr. on the left side, who's going to be almost certainly a first-round pick and maybe the first offensive tackle taken? And he said it was DeJuan.
Yeah.
And DeJuan has cut some weight to 375. He looked pretty svelte out there.
Yeah, actually, he actually had his shirt rolled up. So there was an ab sighting with a couple ripples in there.
At 375.
At 375 pounds. But the first day, I thought he was the most dominant offensive lineman down here of the bunch. And I think he really helped himself. He may not be the fleetest of foot, but he has really good movement skills for his size. But you can't get around the guy. It's almost impossible to get around him with that wingspan. And even if a defensive pass rusher gets on his edge or on his shoulder, he is so long, you got to go another 10 yards around his arm to even get back to the quarterback. So
you comped him to Orlando Brown.
I comped him to Orlando Brown.
The original Orlando Brown.
Zeus?
Right.
No, I think he's a better athlete than Zeus.
Right, okay. I was going to say.
Better than Trent Brown, too, who we talked about earlier, who came out of Florida, who was another big giant of a man.
Could DeJuan sneak into the first round?
I don't know. I think if he – okay, now here's what will happen. If he goes, say he runs at the combine, runs at the pro day, and he runs 5'8", that's not going to get him in the first round.
Why do you care about that?
Because you're going to look at the 10 time as well, and that makes a difference in the offensive lineman. And I don't want to go into a whole analytical conversation because it'll go over yours, and Debo will fall asleep as he tries to produce this show from wherever the hell he's at tonight.
Parts unknown.
But if he runs 4.3s or 5.3s, somewhere in that range, he has a chance to definitely break cracking in the first round.
If he runs 4.3, he's going first overall.
Yeah.
that would be amazing. But in the one-on-one drills this week at the Senior Bowl, we saw him just not only stonewall Isaiah Foskey, who was probably one of the stronger edge rushers here, but got him off his feet. And part of the issue was Foskey stopped his feet, and you can't do that against a dump truck. It's just a lose-lose. But again, one practice in, and we've seen this before with non-injury-related situations where players just their agents tell them to turn off the engine. But DeJuan Jones, his week went pretty well, even though he's out here for one practice. So I'll mention two other guys, and then we'll hit some guys that needed better weeks, but certainly not the end of their – there's no death knell for what it means for them going forward, but just they probably would have preferred to have better weeks here. But I'll talk about my guy, and I think this is our other dollar bet. Debo, you can confirm. it was Michael Wilson or Xavier Hutchinson gets drafted higher.
Ooh.
And you've been crushing me on Michael Wilson up to this week. And you, I think you finally came around late Thursday. Michael Wilson, the wide receiver out of Stanford, 6'1", 216, I think is what he weighed in at. I thought he had a good week.
Yeah, he did. He surprised me a little bit. He actually caught the ball and he actually ran faster than I thought.
He was moving.
Yeah. And I liked Hutchinson a little better when I watched the tape.
Yeah.
But here, if we had to nudge guys, and this is where teams and general managers and scouts start nudging guys that are in the same area of the draft. Well, okay, let's look at the one-on-ones in the Senior Bowl. But I thought your guy Wilson, and I know you're prejudiced because of his name.
Yes.
But you ought to just look at a clear vision and just judge people for who they are, not what their last name is.
He didn't pick his last name. So again, but they're going to be in the same cluster, I would imagine, when we break these.
Yeah, and I think it'll separate itself out. But he, I thought, separated himself. Take out the small receivers that we just talked about that are return specialists. To me, he was probably the most impressive of all the bigger receivers down here. The way he looked like ran, the way he ran his routes, the way he was able to separate. Had a couple drops, but for the most part, he caught the ball pretty consistently. So I definitely have to say I was impressed with him.
And again, he could be a guy that ends up sneaking into to Friday based on the way his pre-draft process has started. If he continues down that road, I liked Xavier Hutchinson, the wide receiver at Iowa State, late third, early fourth. And I probably am still there. Like, he didn't have a bad week. He just, compared to Michael Wilson, it wasn't quite as dynamic as perhaps we were hoping to see. Let's talk about some other guys. We talked about some of the quarterbacks and their struggles there. So Luke Musgrave has gotten some run as a tight end that a lot of people are going to be focused on. He was injured, didn't play much of the season, and he looked bigger than I thought in person than when I saw him on tape. But he's not going to block, and you have to be okay with that if you take him high in the draft as a receiving target, which he's certainly capable of. But I felt like he wasn't as consistent as I want him to be. Every few passes, we'd say, oh, there's a drop, and it'd be Musgrave. Does this concern you at all? Is this just a function of
Yeah, I think it's a little bit on how rusty was he, because I think he played the first two games of the season and then sat out the rest of the year. So technically he hasn't played for almost a year of football. And but the one thing is that I was surprised on how well he was built for how tall he is. He was put together. He was a little disappointing as a run blocker, but you never really had to do that at Oregon State. The one thing I did notice is for a guy that size, he can really run and stretch the field. And for a guy that tall, I thought he got into and out of his breaks. The thing that just disappointed me the most was the drops, and especially drops in contested situations. You know, he made a couple of nice catches. He struggled Tuesday and early Wednesday. Then Wednesday late during team period, he started making some plays. Today he had a couple drops in contested situations. So a guy that size with that athletic ability, he really could have shot up if he would have caught the ball more consistently than he did down here at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, he'll go to the combine, he'll run a 4.56, and everyone will forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to remember, this time of year with scouts and general manager, everybody is trying to poke as many holes into these guys as possible. This guy can't play, this guy can't play, and when you look at the end of your draft meetings, if they're not a top five pick, then no one can play in the league. But then the closer the draft gets, you fall back in love with everybody.
And you told me this early on. You're not necessarily looking for what a guy can't do. You want to see what he can do, because that's the whole point of playing football. I mean, I get it. A lot of people can't do things, but what can this guy add to the team that you're thinking about drafting? Was there anyone that didn't quite meet your expectations this week?
There were a couple guys. I think, you know, if I look down here at my list, I would say – you know, one of the guys I was a little disappointed in was Daniel Scott from Cal, because I thought as a safety, and when I watched him, that he was a very good football player, better closer to the box. But I thought on the tape I saw in the fall, he had good range on the back end, had some ball skills, and I just didn't see that equate to what I saw in practice. I thought he was a little stiffer in space, especially when he had to work versus receivers. Gave up a touchdown today in the red zone. So I'm going to go back and maybe look at the practices, because we're doing all this based just off a live look.
Right.
We got, you know, 80 bodies running around here and there, but I want to go back and see the tape. But I thought I was going to expect more out of him than I saw, because he was one of my good football player guys that wasn't really a recognizable name.
And the fall tape I liked a lot, and I thought he had a potential to be a day two guy. And again, you have to go back and watch and wonder why is he getting beat? Why is the separation there in those downfield throws? So again, something to watch. All right, Rick, we'll get out of here on this. Do you have a favorite guy that you want to pump up before we get out? One last guy that you were excited by what he did? And if you need help, I can tell you who your answer is going to be.
Who's my answer going to be?
It's going to be Riley Moss, the cornerback at
Iowa. I love Riley Moss, the corner from Iowa.
You told me Monday night that he's going to run the 4.3s, and I laughed myself out of the table. And Debo mentioned earlier today that he said he's going to run the 4.3s, and he looked fast.
Yeah, no, he was a kid that everybody was talking about was, is he fast enough or does he have enough athletic movement skills to play corner at the NFL? Everybody's kind of projecting him because he's a smart, instinctive football player, the free safety.
Right.
But I thought he held his own and was one of the better corners down here. If you take Kelly, you take Rush, I thought he was right up there. Maybe not as productive as some of those guys, but held his own against this receiver class down here. The one thing that impressed me is I did see the speed. And yes, when he had to turn out, when he got worked upfield and he had to turn his hips, and when he got stretched down the field on some vertical routes, he stayed stride for stride with a lot of these guys. And I was pretty excited to see that. And I think he is a legit NFL corner.
And if you're watching on YouTube, Debo has the speed leaders from the day one of practice. Riley Moss is at the top among the defensive backs. So with our guy, Sidney Brown, he's our guy now. And along with Anthony Johnson on EBA, Jay Ward out of LSU, and Ronnie Hickman out of Ohio State, the last two are safeties. And Johnson's future may end up being at safety, depending on how this thing plays out. My guy, before we go and get out of here, he was a late ad, showed up Wednesday. I don't think he practiced.
Oh, don't take my guy. You're taking my guy from Sac State?
That's right.
Oh, God.
Marte Mapu.
I got to stop talking to you during practices, so I got to point out guys to you. So
I don't
tell me what you've seen that you liked about this guy, because I fell in love with the guy at practice.
So he played all over the place during the fall. He would play in the slot. He would play off-ball linebacker. He would play the overhang position. So they moved him around. But it sounds like this week, based on some of the folks you talked to, he's primarily, and he was listed as a linebacker, so he may move inside. I don't know if he's going to gain weight or what.
They lined him up at linebacker mm-hmm. when he practiced yesterday. And the one thing that really stood out to me is this is a small school kid that had a chip on his shoulder and wanted to prove that he belonged here and how athletic, and you've seen the speed. And right away, he's going to have to learn how to play linebacker. But the one thing that stood out with that speed and that athleticism, it looks like he's a hitter.
Yep.
That he's going to be an immediate help on special teams as he learns and grows into the position of linebacker. And it may take him a year or two. But the other thing that out of anyone that we watched, and we watched a lot of great players down here, is his effort and chase to the ball. I mean, he's chasing running backs 30 yards downfield, running back to get in a huddle, chasing a guy over to the sideline. Those are the first thing that popped out to me. I was like, wow, this guy's pretty athletic and he can run. And then 10 yards, 20 yards, 30 yards. I was like, this still guy is running and chasing, and he's playing his rear end off to prove everybody that, hey, I belong here and I belong playing in the NFL.
So he probably came in as day three guy, Sacramento State. They played at least one big game early in the season outside of their schedule. So I get sort of some Talanoa Hufanga vibes. I get some sort of Jeremy Chinn light vibes. Obviously, Hufanga went in the fifth round, I believe. Chinn went in the second round, I believe.
Oh, that's a pretty big wingspan. I mean, span. Is he second rounder? Or is he more of a fifth rounder?
He's probably Prisco makes funny about falling in love. Like I said, I don't know if he's top 100, but the way he plays, it gets your attention, and that's sort of the whole point. I
mean,
he's not a guy who's you want him to be better than he is. He's better than you expected, which sort of excites you. One last thing before we go, and I thought about this Thursday during while you were inside getting hot chocolate, and I was freezing watching the stretching of the second team.
Using my binoculars, the first time I ever came to a Senior Bowl, and an analyst doesn't have a pair of binoculars.
They're built into the glasses.
They're special. Apparently, glasses. They don't work.
So, do you watch? Because you mentioned watching Mapu run down players and hustle back and forth to the huddle. Do you watch warm ups to see how guys stretch, whether they're serious about it or not? Or is that not you don't know?
Yeah, a little bit here. It's like everybody's on their best behavior. Right. But the one thing that you really found out a lot about a player, like when I went to games and stuff that you can't see on tape. Like I was at a game and you know, a guy is first in line or a guy that's, you know, getting lathered up, you know, it's important to him. I've seen guys that were first round talents, and this guy was as talented as any player, and I won't mention his name, but wouldn't warm up with his position group and actually went back in the huddle. The coaches are trying to talk and come back out. He did not have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
But they had to play him because he was their best player. So
that's how that works.
But yeah. But eventually that catches up with you, and it caught up with this player once he got into the NFL.
Okay. That's it. That's a wrap from Mobile, Alabama. Senior Bowl 2023 in the books. Rick's leaving tomorrow. I take my job seriously, so I will be here through the game on Saturday. Then Rick and I will reconvene in Phoenix next week. We'll have our podcast on Tuesday, and we'll tweet out details about exactly when that is. I know Debo has it on the schedule, but I don't have it in front of me. But we're doing that Tuesday. You can watch us live. We'll be there all week with CBS Sports HQ as well. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you leave a five-star review and a little note about what you want Rick to talk about for Rick's picks or any draft-related questions or any questions about anything. I've learned, like, Rick has a lot of advice about all sorts of things I've learned this week. All of it may not be true.
Oh, wait, I didn't get it yet. I keep going. Yeah.
And get your free shirt.
from Debo. From Make Debo. Sure you run Debo down in Arizona.
Not with the car, just asking for their shirt. You have to specify. All right, that's it. That's a wrap for episode 9. Thank you, everybody. And we will see you guys next week from Phoenix.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.